This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When writer and performer Sandra Singh Lo found herself solidly in middle age, she had an affair, left her husband, blew up her family, and roared into menopause all in one long go. It was a roaring mess of big change that left her more than once at the end of her rope, juggling kids, careers, lover, an aging parent, and her sense of herself. She survived to tell the story of her change. This hour on Point, Sandra Singh Lo on menopause, mothering teens, managing aging parents, and a whole lot more. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do you relate? Have you been there, partway there? What do you hear in her story? Do we need someone like Sandra Singh Lo laying it all out to remind us that it's okay to stumble a bit through middle age? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from San Francisco is Sandra Singh Lo, contributing editor at The Atlantic, host of the syndicated public radio show, The Lowdown on Science, author of Mother on Fire, lots of volumes, and her latest, The Mad Woman in the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones. Sandra Singh Lo, welcome back to On Point. It's great to have you here.
Well, thanks for having me, Tom. What an introduction. Wow, that sounds epic.
Well, you wrote the book. You wrote the book, madam. And it's funny because we've had you on any number of times during the years of all this chaos that you're describing here. You're very good at putting on a good front on the air. I mean, who knew that back home it was all, you know, pirate warfare and blowing up?
Well, here's the thing, Tom. I wasn't aware that there was a pirate ship blowing up within myself because many of us go through, you know, we're married parents, we're working, we're answering our email, we're, you know, helping our friends on Kickstarter, listening to NPR, having our latte, we're coping in many ways and we're unaware that there's a second self inside us roaring to get out.
Give us the basics. We're gonna go through this, but Sandra, what have you done? You were happily married, or at least had been happily married. You have a couple of wonderful daughters who were quite young when the book begins. They get into their teen years before you're finished with this. What happened in there?
Well, Tom, I turned 40 and turned 45. And what women go on their own trajectory that in our 20s, we kind of built our careers. In our 30s, then we had our families and children a little later than usual. Mm. And then in our 40s, we start to sort of, I did public school organizing, as in my last book, Mother on Fire. Yep. And then we started getting these big birthdays, like 45, 50. And we go, you know, instead of having kind of like the wine and cheese party where we throw affirmations into the fire with our Hadassah arms, you know, like love, sing, you know, be joyous, dance. We go, you know what? We're going to go to Burning Man. That's right. We're going to get in an RV and go to Burning Man just so that we can say our rock and roll years are not over.
Get naked, dance in the sun, go crazy. In your case, start an affair.
Yeah, unfortunately, that was a byproduct, but it wasn't the hallucinogenic drug dance that you think it was. I actually went with my best friend of 10 years and also my business partner, who was a male friend of mine, a platonic friend, that he was supposed to drive the RV and hold smart water bottles of hydration while we women sort of went nuts. But it was there in the desert, sort of as in a crazy kind of Merchant Ivory movie gone wrong, that in the desert heat, due to the lack of hydration, it's that sudden moment that you turn to your friend and go, oh, you're whom I love, my best platonic friend and parent and coworker of all these years. That's why we're always together. I realize, man, I love you, but it's never going to work out because we're married with kids. And now, excuse me while I go hurl my youth into the fire, where suddenly at like 46, you realize this veil of all this life that you've cobbled together for yourself, you know, based on good HBO and good Trader Joe's snacks and listening to great shows like On Point with Tom Ashbrook in the middle of your day, you know, that and there is an NPR sort of like theme that I have sort of in all of my books that sort of comes up here, where we go around in the middle of our day and with our latte and our NPR, we can make it through. But sometimes kind of you have to explode out of that and go, well, what am I really, who am I really underneath this? And do I have any desires or passions left in the middle of my life that need to be expressed another way?
A part NPR, part NPR and part Pirates of the Caribbean here. When the book opens, you are throwing books from your old life into a dumpster. You're out of your longtime house with longtime husband. You're in a whole new world. It has been a really bumpy ride. And you're kind of considering where you've come to. There's a little reading I wish you'd do where you've got your cannonball-torn pirate ship there, Sandra, from the new book, The Mad Woman in the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones. Could you read a little bit?
Yes. Here I stand on a cannonball-torn pirate ship for one, with a destroyed family, a storm feat of alienated family friends, professional colleagues who are aghast and embarrassed for me, a bunch of pinwheel-eyed public school mom friends who are now all themselves scattered in chaos, their gunboats shattered as I stagger, fatally wounded, toward 50. I have children, little girls who are my heart and soul and earth's delight before all this madness. What of my babies? What have I done? Oh, God, I say to myself as I weep at U-Haul, flinging the Iliad, the Odyssey, and then the Aeneid into the dumpster. Clang, clang, clang. I feel in my bones not just the senseless waste of my life, all the good things taken for granted that I have squandered, but the exact measure and weight of my sorrow, and the sorrow of everyone else as I hurl. Book after book pounds into the dumpster, bringing perpetual motion but no relief. My heart is broken. My world is dead. My home destroyed. I'm staring into the void. It's the pointless void I have carved out myself, maiming all my loved ones in the process. It's like waking up the star of one of those hangover movies, except that you are not a guy, you are not in your 20s, you have no madcap party buddies, and this is not hilarious.
No, no, it was not. Sandra Singlow reading from The Mad Woman in the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones. And at this point, I'm trying to figure out as a reader, I mean, you say right up front, and this is very evident in everything you've written, in your presence on radio and everywhere, but you say, I am, for better or for worse, a person obsessively driven by passions large and small. So is all this just about being passionate, Sandra Singlow, or is it about menopause?
Well, it is both entwined, and that's sort of like the braid of this book, that menopause is, you know, it's not well understood, and it's thought of being as the change and when women sort of cease to exist for the species, etc. But as I started researching this phenomenon, as it was an article that I was assigned in The Atlantic called The Bitch Is Back for many years, because menopause is a huge phenomenon. Next year in 2015, almost one in two American women will be menopausal. But women between the ages of 40 and 60 are America's largest demographic group. Mm-hmm. There are 50 million of us. But what it is in this book, it was the run-up to menopause, which is called perimenopause, which is when your hormone levels really start to wildly fluctuate, and it affects every woman in a different way. And it can begin as early as in your 30s and last between 4 and 15 years, another of the mysteries of womanhood. What happens then is – so it is – now that we live to almost 90 as opposed to 45 in 1900, sort of menopause isn't the change. Fertility is the change. It's that middle third when that estrogen cloud comes down and we want to bond and nurture and set the table for 12 people and cut up their little sandwiches for them like a Stepford wife. We go into kind of a glaze, so is for the fertility glaze. And then when that starts to lift, you know, it's that moment that's talked about by Christiane Northrup in The Wisdom of Menopause, where this cloud sort of lifts and you look around, you go, why am I cutting all these sandwiches? Why am I standing in the kitchen doing the dishes when I should be hurling them at the people in my household who have been sitting there letting me serve them for years and years?
Get me out of here. And you did get out of here.
So it's where you're not changing, but you're returning to your former self. You're returning to reality, going, questioning sort of the female as the nurturer, putting everyone before her. So what people can experience in a lot of different ways, and sort of in menopause, actually your hormone levels go back to where they were as a pre-adolescent girl. You are now returning to where you were with a little more free testosterone.
But your story is so stormy here, Sandra. And I mean, as a man sort of watching and listening and living with a lot of women, you know, sisters, wife, daughter, and many more over time, I mean, what I've heard is a lot of don't portray us as just bottled up hormone storms. Don't do that to us. That's a kind of a diss of women. But here you are lashing it into this whole very stormy story of your own.
Well, I think if you look at specific sections, so my storm is kind of like returning to this adolescence and this freedom and this passion, which happened in this particular time of going, I don't know who I am. I'm not that sedate person I was. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, stormy feelings, and I'm working all of this. But I think that you touch on a really good point of, you know, almost 50 years after Betty Friedan, with all, you know, we're leaning in now with Sheryl Sandberg. Yeah, yeah. There's a sense that we don't want to admit that we have these storms for fear that we'll, you know, lose, you know, cents on the dollar compared to what a man makes. But in fact, female stories are much grander and bigger than this, in the sense that once you get to menopause, you return to your home where you were, and you have almost half your life ahead of you, and you're this incredibly wise and free and extraordinary being, which sounds like a lot of, you know, women's, but it really is true. And so, and for instance, I use the example just of, for, you know, we think, for instance, in politics, it's always been said a woman president will have that period of month and hit the red button. But as we see, estrogen isn't the problem. Testosterone is.
Sandra Singh Lowe, stand by there in San Francisco. It's great to have you with us. The new book is The Mad Woman in the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones. Behind us right here, singer Jill Miller with Menopause Blues. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Well, girl, it's the least we can do. It's the only way through. Those menopause blues. Those menopause blues. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with writer and performer Sandra Singh Lowe about her midlife menopause meltdown. And what she learned there, how she got through it. Her new book is The Mad Woman in the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones. And believe me when I tell you, yes, something was raging here, and it was more than a year. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. I mean, lots of people write and talk about menopause. Here's from the new movie, The M Word, about a woman who wants to film a documentary about women going through menopause. She interviews women going through the change.
My husband brings me a cup of coffee and says, good morning, sweetheart. And I want to kill him.
Night sweats.
Mood swings.
I want to kill him in really creative and specific ways.
Cramps, emotional issues,
memory loss.
And then I want to have sex.
Hey, all at once. And on top of that, everything else comes into, have you been there? Raising kids, caring for an aging parent, trying to keep a marriage fired up, going a little bit crazy. Sandra Singh Lowe joins us from San Francisco. And Sandra, we've got callers already for you. Jenna in Madison, Wisconsin, you're on with Sandra Singh Lowe.
Thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
It's interesting that I'm listening to this. I'm 42. I'm just going through menopause. Got four little kids, and I am literally in the car driving across country to go pick up my aging parents to bring them back to live with me.
Oh, my God.
You've got more people coming to your table. Where does it leave? Where's your state of mind, Jenna?
Well, I can tell you that I'm a responsible person. I'm going through menopause, and boy, do I want to go back and do tequila shots.
Sounds like you could have a nice evening with Sandra Singh Lowe, or a wild one anyway. Sandra, advice for Jenna as she goes to pick up her aging parents and add them to her, you know, brood of four plus, I'm imagining,
I'm just waiting for... Jenna didn't mention if there is a sick dog in the back of the car that she's also giving medication to. That's the one thing I'm missing from this story. But, oh, my God. I think the tequila shot is advisable, perhaps not while driving, but at the end of the day, absolutely. I mean, it's funny. We laugh about it, but I think a lot of women who I know like use half their Weight Watchers points for Chardonnay. And I think at the end of the day, having something to look forward to is better than water and kale and yoga, which is what all the books recommend. But I think with Jenna, it sounds to me my armchair therapy is like,
all right.
There can go up and down, and she's having a fantastic day today, and then we'll crash tomorrow and then enjoy that bed rest when she gets there.
Jenna, we wish you best of luck with all of it. It could be a long and wild road if Sandra's tale is a model for it. Sandra, take us through the stations of the cross here in your tale. I mean, you had a marriage of some years. It appeared to be pretty stable.
Yes,
you had a couple of lovely daughters. Why?
Yeah.
Are you saying this happened because, you know, the glaze of fertility left me and I realized my husband didn't fit my adolescent self?
You know what? And it was only because of this other person, my friend, who it was like this moment of where you see, and I think that sort of spikes it if as married people, you know, sometimes we have married flirtations that are totally harmless. Mm. And it, you know, but this was kind of this lifting of, oh my God, I like you. You're my friend. And also I would like to go further with you. And he felt the same way. So it's that moment in the middle of your life where you see a little patch of blue ahead and you go, if I'm lying on my deathbed at 90 and I had a chance at love, at real romantic love and falling in love, which is something many of us crave at any age. I have a chance to feel those feelings and I'm going to go for it. And then, of course, the wreckage that spills out from that. But that is such a precious, rare, fleeting thing that if my heart, something speaks to my heart and I think I can have it and that person reciprocates, I must answer this call, you know.
I mean, the other pieces of the puzzle are flying every which way. He bolts with you, then he bolts back to his wife, says, I can't do this. And he comes back. You're left alone for a while, comes back to you again. And you've got all these other pieces floating in here. You're coming to grips with menopause, perimenopause, the sort of the gym story that's woven through here, the weight story that's woven through here, the find yourself story, the where's daddy story. Your dad comes in as a whole story in himself. Good luck, Jenna.
Yes, no, exactly. And I think, and you know, I don't mind throwing in that when I was alone in this cabin for a while, it's kind of like I couldn't sleep at all. I couldn't sleep any night ever.
There's and the so Ambien piece then.
Prescription for Ambien, which I wisely paired with white wine, which you're not supposed to do, and woke up with a totally paralyzed right arm for a few weeks. So and that's quite metaphorical, Tom, is like it's the right arm that you do everything with. So yes, everything is like this firestorm, but you know, and there's some writing about either straight Western medicine or straight Eastern medicine, where an Eastern, you know, Eastern mystic, say at the age of 40, the Kundalini or this energy starts rising up the spine and cleansing all the various chakras, you know, the power chakra, the relationship, the love. So if you are losing your job and getting divorced at the same time that your right leg is going limp and you're having gastric problems, they would say, your chakra is being cleansed so it can go to the next level. So that's why, you know, that's one explanation, even though it's a little woo-woo and Eastern. But when you see people going nuts in their 40s, you go, that's not a bad explanation.
If someone had said to you in the midst of this, in the sort of furnace of it, hey, it's just your hormones, settle down, Sandra, would you slug them?
Well, first I would ignore them and not be able to hear them. And then I would slug them because I think, honestly, Tom, and you're just going for it, so I'll go for it too. I think therapy became entirely useless in this period of time because you're having a big, epic, chthonic, I love that Camille Paglia word, chthonic episode of giant firestorms that are, you know, almost planetary, like really big. And so you go to try to book a therapy appointment and your therapist goes, well, I have Thursday at 5:45 p.m. or next Wednesday at 3:07 45 minutes. And it's kind of like, no, if you want to help me, you need to come with me for 72 hours and drum in a weekend in a sweat lodge. I can't do it on your schedule when that little parking ticket that never really works, and you flip up the little light while reading Shambhala Bella magazine and having chamomile tea. And then she leans forward in her car and says, let's go back to talking about your mother. And I don't know if you have been in as many decades as therapy as me, Tom. I'm 52. I've been through decades of therapy. I've talked about my mom so many times, I fall asleep in the middle of that. And at the age of 50, you know, what's kind of like the mom stuff, you got to move on to the other stuff. So I found therapy pretty useless. And when I was in the middle of this kind of affair, you know, and everything was breaking up, she said, well, Sandra, you can't move in immediately with this guy. You should go for about 3 or 6 months and live by yourself and really understand who you are. Yeah. But your therapist is not your tribal elder. You're not going to listen to her. You're going to strap yourself to the train tracks and hopefully you can walk away on two legs.
She did not see the pirate ship you were sailing on. No, I haven't had 5 minutes. Maybe I should. Sean in Nashville. Sean, you're on with Sandra Singh Lowe.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I need to buy Sandra's book because my life has paralleled so much what she has gone through. I can't believe it. I'm sitting in my car kind of laughing about it. My perimenopause began at around 45 years old, I suppose. I'm 57 now.
Okay.
It's a continuing storm. I can clearly remember when it finally really began. I stood in the living room, told my husband of 12 years that I wanted a divorce. I did carry through on that divorce. I began an affair before the divorce was even final. I remember my feelings on going through that divorce process as being, you know, that I just have to have it done. It has to happen now. It was just like all my feelings over the years had caught up with me. I told my two teenage daughters at the time that they were basically, you know, on their own. I've done enough for you. You know, I just can't stand it anymore.
Yeah.
I enrolled in nursing school. I can remember during the divorce process that probably more than once, or even now as I approach 57, saying to people and really kind of meaning it, I will kill you, you know, in certain situations.
Sean, were you, in retrospect, if we can use that word, were you right? Were you nuts? Was this you finding your truth? Was this you a little unhinged? How do you look at it?
I think it was a combination of all those things thrown into one thing. I had always been a submissive person, had always been concerned with what people thought about me. I was the typical school mom on every field trip, you know, participating in that whole thing. I'm sure people thought truly that I'd lost my mind, and I think to a degree that I did lose my mind. I did go to some brief therapy. I did receive hormones. Ironically, I have an appointment today to go see my doctor because I've been off my hormones for about 6 months, you know, thinking that the process was over, that maybe I have regained some, most of my
equilibrium.
Yeah. I haven't.
Yeah. Wow.
That is classic. That is every beat of that story is just classic. And I guess, do you feel that you're going to a better, calmer place eventually now that you've worked all of these, lived this story?
Mm-hmm. I feel that I eventually will arrive at that spot. Although I have come to realize that I'm still on the continuing journey, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
I have remained friends with the husband who I divorced, bless his heart, him going through that. I can remember chasing him with a chain around his truck when I was at the height of, you know, of all the emotions that I had.
Yeah.
So I will get my hormones back today and realize that it's a continuing journey for me.
Sean,
good
luck.
But also
the
core of being submissive, I mean, you actually see it really well. I mean, there's a lot of perspective in what you've said, and the core of that thing that exploded is just beautifully put.
Boy, that is a long road. It's interesting online, Sandra and Sean, lots of men are writing in too and talking about their own midlife crisis, but this has an extra twist to it, which I think leaves men kind of just agape sometimes. Sandra, you write about old menopause and new menopause. And in new menopause, you say, think of all the very prominent people, celebrities, menopausal or post, Madonna, Demi Moore, Oprah, Susie Orman, Katie Couric, you know, right on down, or Hillary Clinton, Sarah Palin, Angela Merkel, for heaven's sakes. You say, in the new menopause, these steely-eyed women are driving the freeways, running businesses, doing newscasts, setting interest rates, hello, Janet Yellen, performing dental surgery. What's the difference between old and new menopause by your lights?
Well, in old menopause, there was this notion. It was back in my mother's day. They didn't talk about it in the 50s or 60s. You know, again, she's drying the dishes, then she's hurling them, and they didn't talk about it. They went to their bedroom for hours or days or even years, and sort of it wasn't discussed where they sort of something was off with them.
Your mom
but
with
today,
her one long Camel cigarette
at the end of the day.
Lawn,
one
yeah.
cigarette,
yeah.
that one shot of tequila, whatever it is, or two. But, you know, and so it wasn't – and women weren't very powerful at that particular time, and they were housewives, and then they were more erased after that happened. Like today, after women sort of rock through it, and I use the thing that Courtney Love is going to be menopausal any minute now, so I go ready, set, menopalooza for the Gen Xers who are in menopause. And it's going to look totally different because we live much longer. We're in positions of power and financial independence. And once that stormy hormone thing goes up and down, goes away, you're menopausal, you don't have a cycle anymore. So you're not given to those vagaries of ups and downs. Mm-hmm. And you're not, as I said, you know, ruled by testosterone, as sort of the male politicians sometimes can be. And so there's decades of power, and I think evolutionary it's going to change. However, you know, I want to address the men. I think the men have a really interesting point, and that maybe in this more frank discussion of menopause, we can talk about what they go through as well. Because I think while women have a bigger bandwidth typically of what they express, we share and sometimes we overshare, men have really strong feelings as well, but they're not able to always express them. And I give the example in my book of sadly a friend of mine who ended up being bipolar and, you know, and killing himself, unfortunately, because he was so depressed. But he had that Facebook page that is only about the Seattle Mariners, his boats, his dog. It's just this sort of patter of cheer, because sometimes we don't have a vocabulary to talk to each other about the moods and the darkness that we're actually feeling.
Sherry in Brunswick, Ohio. Sherry, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My mother went through an early menopause. She was about 42. Back in the mid-80s, and like your guest was saying, even though the feminist movement had started, they hadn't studied menopause, and hers was the menopause from hell. And it did end in divorce with other factors. So I've been afraid my whole life of having the menopause she had. So now I'm 44, almost 45, and I've been in this premenopausal state for at least 3 years now.
Okay.
And what I'm doing, because, you know, they tried to tell my mother she was crazy, and she insisted she was not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm already on an antidepressant to kind of help those mood swings in the months that were horrid, because I don't want to lose my family over this.
Yeah.
But now I'm going to, or I just made an appointment today to go to an apothecary where my GYN recommended it, where they test your saliva for the progesterone level and then give you medication, natural medication specifically designed for your body and what your body is doing. And I am certainly hoping that that is going to bring a lot of things under control.
Wrestling with the chemistry and maybe acting on it. Sherry, let us pick that up if we may, and good luck to you. Sandra, what about what's been learned about the chemistry, what can be done, what can't, what should, what shouldn't? There was the whole debate over estrogen and whether that therapy was good or very dangerous.
Yeah, it's really fascinating, and my heart goes out to the caller, absolutely. So Christiane Northrup wrote The Wisdom of Menopause many years ago, and it's still the Bible of menopause, although it's 700 pages long, so many people don't get through it all in one sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And women's hormone levels are different, and the way that it affects their brain chemistry and the rewiring of their brain is a little bit different. So in the end, I would say to, you know, moms and wives who are going through this that are calling in, is my gynecologist, who I eventually went to after a year because I was afraid to be weighed, she gave this great speech, and she, after I cried for an hour in my paper gown, and she just handed tissues, and I described all my moods in this free-floating, vague way, and she wrote down on a pad what my periods had gone, you know, up and down, and the cycle.
Yeah.
And then she said, well, you know, at heart, and that's what I would say to women who are calling in. I would say, you know, Sharon, at heart, there are two kinds of girls. There's Chinette girls who you pile stuff on their plate and it doesn't break. And there's paper plate girls who you put a carrot on it and it shatters. You are, at heart, a Chinette girl. You are a strong woman who can take a lot on her plate generally. But right now, you're having a emotional response to a really physiological chemical phenomenon. So we're going to take a few things off of your plate and we're going to strengthen the plate. So strengthening the plate is either taking low-level antidepressants or hormones or doing nothing, but you also have to take stuff off the plate, as I worry about Jana driving with her children to get her elderly parent and the dog that I put in the back. Right. You have to take that dog out, and maybe the elderly parent shouldn't move in. I mean, that it's two things you have to do.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with writer and performer Sandra Singlow about her midlife, menopause, meltdown, and what she learned there, how she got through it. Her new book tells the story. It is The Mad Woman in the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Sort of blew everything up and has kind of come out the other side now to tell that story. She writes about old menopause and new menopause, different ways of thinking about it over time. Go back a little here. Here's The Cosby Show. Claire Huxtable, played by Felicia Rashad, tells her children she's going through menopause, but then gets annoyed when they're too careful around her. So she decides it's time to play a trick on them, pretend she's really falling apart.
Now, where is Rudy?
Mom, don't you remember? Denise took her and Olivia out to dinner.
And who is Denise? Oh, that's right. That's the child's sister.
Hey, Mom, would you like some corn?
I was hoping we'd have carrots.
Ha-ha, there's The Cosby Show. Sandra Singlow did it without a laugh track, and of course it went to her marriage as well. Blew it up. Things can get fraught. 2012 movie This Is 40, Debbie and Pete, Leslie Mann and Paul Rudd talk about their marriage.
Fight.
I don't know. You get so mad at me. Sometimes I think you want to kill me.
I do want to kill you.
How would you do it?
I would poison your cupcakes that you pretend not to eat every day. I would enjoy our last few months together, but while killing you.
I don't know, Sandra Singlow in San Francisco, they all have laugh tracks and rock and roll, sound beds beneath them. Not always that easy in real life. Lots of interesting response online here. Daphne says midlife crises are for people that find reality after an unfulfilled life based on lies, superstition, and expectation of others. Karen says, at 46, the closest I can say I am allowing myself to finally follow my passions is that I only dabbled in before. She's doing it, not holding back on voicing her opinions. She guesses she's lucky with that. It's funny how many guys are in here, too. John says, hey, I took up hunting and fishing. I wish I'd done it in my 30s. What peace to be out at dawn. It sounds so easy by comparison. I'm sure it's not, but there are others here. On and offline. I mean, Dave says, cry me a river, Sandra. The whole idea of resetting by self-destructing good lives strikes me as selfish and trite. And if I may, let me get a call from Grace in Montgomery, Alabama. Maybe on that theme. Grace, what do you think?
Oh, yes. I am almost 40 and have started having the crazy feelings and my life is crazy and I want to do something different. But the truth of the matter is I don't think people can use it as an excuse to just blow up their lives and ruin their marriage and their kids' lives. I know for me, I went online and thought, oh, my God, am I really crazy? And I realized, oh, no, this is getting menopause. And I just ran with it to my husband. I said, we got to get through this together. You know, what can I do? What can we do to make life more exciting? What can we do to fall in love more together? And, you know, we're coming through it, and it's not easy. But I think we're doing it a little bit more productively than, you know, getting in the car and driving across country and forgetting about everything else that I've built my life on.
Grace, let us take it right there. Sandra, come on, you vandal, you Visigoth, you. Why didn't you run to your husband and work it out?
I'm not against marriage. I mean, and I think, Grace, that she is doing all the work that she needs to do, mm-hmm. and that she's confronting this. She's honest with her husband. They are working through it. And that relationships can really be stronger if they're meant to be together and there's compatibility and values and openness and they're going to work through it. Marriages can be stronger. Definitely relationships will change, though, regardless. They may change cataclysmically or they may change really mindfully, like it sounds like what Grace is doing. And they'll be the stronger for it. You know, I think some of us, and it depends. I had been in a relationship for 20 years. Mm-hmm. So I had met my husband at 26, and this was occurring at 46. And we had, and we just grow and change. You're a different person at 46 than at 26 by a lot. And I don't second guess any of the choices that I made. He was the right man to marry, and there were so many good things and our children that came out of that time. In the end, I think that we are happier in different households doing different interests. It's funny, the guy who mentioned hunting and fishing, because my ex-husband was a really big fisherman. And for about 20 years, I went and tried to go fishing with him because I wanted my marriage to work, and I wanted to be really compatible. But in the end, I'm not a fisher person. But I think Grace, I wish her luck, and I think that it sounds like they will survive and that they'll be richer for it.
Of course. You don't know until you're all the way down the road.
You don't know. And for me, I guess what I have to say at this point in my life, I was much more judgmental as a 20-something person. The fact that I had long-term marriage was one of my biggest sources of pride, especially in Los Angeles, where people seem very shallow. But in the end, I realized the human heart has so many ventricles in it, if you will. So I wouldn't judge Grace on either if her marriage survives until they're 90, that's great. If at 51 something – like I guess in the end I myself wouldn't judge what people do because they go through a lot of stuff.
They sure do. Joy in West Bend, Wisconsin. Joy, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for this wonderful program.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the farther side of menopause. I'm 63, and I was an even older mother, so I've got a little bit different experience. But I just wanted to report my observations when I've had feelings of passion during this time.
Yeah.
I have observed that it's been frustrating for me to live in a male-dominated culture, I don't say that as a man-hater or anything. We all participate in male domination worldwide. But how I've observed it is women have wisdom to offer as they get older. I've joined some social justice groups, some small social justice groups.
Mm-hmm.
I've been frustrated that, I bring up an idea and it gets poo-pooed or, the way that the men and women in the group want me to participate is maybe secretarial, maybe, boots on the ground, somebody put plans into effect. I just feel frustrated, and I'm hoping that we are having a new wave of feminism so that people are putting more women into leadership roles and we can somehow, get to live out our contribution to society.
Joy, we hear that. Did your consciousness or your unease with male domination rise with menopause, Joy? Were those kind of on the same track?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you're in the childbearing age and in that whole piece of your life, you're kind of dependent on somebody, or at least I was, to be the main breadwinner. And it worked at that time. It worked I could put a lot into taking care of the family. But now, even as my family is mostly grown, I'm still in that position of taking care of people, and I'm trying to, ease myself out of it so that I can have something else to offer the rest of the world.
Joy, I appreciate your call. Sandra, what about your view of men generally as you made your way through this passage?
Well, there's a lot of interesting themes that she's touching on there. And one is, as they say, it, men get older, they get more conservative. And if women get older, they get more radical. And that seems to be playing out so far. And I think, there are two things I'm hearing. One is that as caregivers, sometimes there is that training oneself to say no, or to not fill in the gap in the conversation and just let it say no and then don't follow that with an explanation.
Right.
So some of that is a little
power.
Bit of self-training.
Mm-hmm.
But the other issue is that there are women, I think that there's a sense sometimes that women over the age of 50 and 60 can start to feel marginalized, like they're not the center. But in fact, since one in two American women will be menopausal by 2015, and we're the biggest demographic group, we are the norm. A 63-year-old woman is kind of like, we are the biggest, we are the norm here.
So how's that going to change our culture if Joy in her own way is making changes? If that's the biggest demographic group, where are you going to steer us, Sandra?
Well, it's going to be interesting. Who knows? You know, by 2016, we may have our first, you know, menopausal women president. If there are more women who are caregivers, but then choosing other roles aside from caregiver, there are a lot of us, and we're going to live a long time. And it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. To a certain extent, some men can step forward and become more of the caregivers. You know, we always hope that that's so. But in my dad's case, he's 93. His caregiver is like a 44-year-old Filipino male nurse who can lift his wheelchair and is getting paid a hefty sum. So that's who's doing his caregiving, you know, freeing women to do other things.
How did it go with your daughters? I mean, you write, Joy says she was an older mother, maybe somewhere in your neck of the woods. I mean, as you were in menopause, your daughters were heading into their teenage years, and you described these parallel universes of growth and hormonal change all in the under the same roof.
Yes. No, a house and Irma Bombeck has that great quote of, you know, I'm wondering at our generation, they've timed the clock of childbearing so that going into menopause and teaching a 16-year-old how to drive a car will occur in the same week. She's a great.
Watch out.
She always says it best. And so, yes, I'm menopausal while raising a teen and a tween daughter. So our household is just, you know, it's crazy. And again, since none of us are, you know, really firing the beautiful estrogen cloud, June Cleaver hormones. Nobody's really doing the dishes or, you know, emptying the litter box. We're reading all the books that we want to read, and we're kind of like, you know, very self-involved in a beautiful way, in a way that we're not, doing laundry for 10 other people.
Yeah,
we try to do our own.
good luck
so,
with that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's pretty. It's not a pretty sight.
No, well, or maybe sometimes. Lindsay in Buffalo, New York. Lindsay, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Yes. What's your story?
I just had a quick question about how menopause could possibly relate to women's fitness and if the author had partaken in, like, yoga and fitness and how that might help regulate your hormones and if it's been studied at all.
Oh, yes. There's a chapter on the gym and more. Lindsay, thanks. Sandra?
Yeah, I mean, there is a fair amount of correlation about that. I mean, I think in all total candor, at the age of 52, and what happens at menopause, they say with that last box of tampons should be a warning that now your belly will never be the same.
Oh.
And people talk about the little belly pooch, they call it the menopot. So, you know, typically the medical advice is, you know, water, kale, you know, cruciferous vegetables, and to do a certain types of exercises in Los Angeles, like Pilates and cardio bar to get to sculpt the body. I think in the end, exercise is the best. I've come to my own terms with it of, you know, sometimes women go into that crazy, I'm going to do bikini boot camp for 6 weeks and get up at 6 to get this other body. And you can do that in spurts and get excited about it and then fall off the wagon. So I think in the end, though, exercise is good mostly to be a mood booster, to get that walk outside. That it's a helpful thing for that rather than going, I'm going to re-sculpt my body to look like Jennifer Aniston's. But I think it can really, you know, getting out vitamin D is extremely good for one as well. So in the Northrop book, it's kind of returning to sunshine. Often we've been doing the, you know, Clinique SPF 90 moisturizer and staying out of the sun. In fact, there are certain times of the day where it's very good to be in the sun and you must get enough of your sun bath. So that's why having a walk outside can be super great. Listening to your favorite music or Tom Ashbrook's On Point to get outside, it's actually a really great thing to do.
Mary in Nashua, New Hampshire. Mary, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I didn't really hear all of your program, but you did mention menopause and midlife crisis, and I just have to throw this into the mix.
Okay.
And I think that menopause, to me, was the most tragic time of my life.
Tragic? Why?
To lose my monthly cycle, to give in to, it's going from one room into another, it's becoming older, it's beginning to dry up. I mean, you're losing your, you've lost your period, aches and pains come on, aging. I mean, there can be said a lot for wisdoms, but I'll tell you, when you have your cycle, it's the most creative time, or at least I'm speaking personally from my experience. I could write a symphony when I was ovulating. It was great. I miss it terribly. And I just want to say, you know, here for the monthly cycle and for menstrual periods, and it's the biggest loss of my life.
Well, amazing. We got candor from every direction here. Sandra, how about it? Wisdom? Tragedy? Both? What?
Well, yeah, and I love actually that your caller is making a point of like, yeah, we're always thrown wisdom. You know, you're a caregiver, wisdom. That's your prize. Good, you can take it back.
Wisdom. Right.
But
give me the juice.
And that's an interesting way of looking at one cycle, because I remember when I got my cycle at like 11 years old, I cried. It was the worst thing that happened to me. I thought my period was going to happen once for 5 days and I would never have it again. I couldn't believe it was going to come back every month. It's like, what have you done to my body? Aliens have captured my body. So I'm not sure I miss, you know, it any particular way. You know, and you can look at it as though actually your body is going back to where you were when you were 12. I remember those years as between 6 and 12 as being kind of awesome. And then the cycle came on and all that came with. So, but I hear what your caller is saying, and every woman is different and experiences things in some different way. But, you know, there's, you know, your cycles were great. Perhaps there's another thing that will happen that will be great. But you know, I can't deny anyone's particular experience. But in the end of life, the time of life that we're fertile and have cycles will probably be not the majority of our lives, but just one particular section. So I respect, you know, every woman is different. That's a fascinating take.
Are you on the other side of this now, Sandra? Is that your perspective? Like, done, been there, done that?
Yeah. I feel like totally. And it's genetic. Like my sister said, when she turned 50, suddenly everything was great and calm and she felt much better. So I really physically feel much better right now at 52.
And all your piracy of those years, are you glad for it? And, you know, in retrospect, I mean, was it right to blow up the marriage? Are your kids okay with how it's all worked out? Are you happy for the ride you took?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, happy. I mean, when you describe it's kind of simple. Oh my God, that was a lot of stuff. You know, I think so. You know, it's kind of in the end, I think everybody landed where they were supposed to be. My girls were always used to kind of like these parallel households and a lot of travel. And I pray. And all you can do is like go, you know, our kids choose which parents the cosmos needs to send to them. They have their own quirks and they're funny and they're creative. And I think being in middle school, they have a lot of freedom to be themselves, but a lot of structure as well between their very sensible and nurturing dad and their slightly wacky, but, you know, permissive mother. So I think between these two poles, they have what they need. And, you know, what a long, strange trip it's been, to quote the Grateful Dead.
Yeah. You know, menopause or not, I have to say your passion and candor throughout life is really a gift. Before this, during this, now after this, you tell a story with so much generosity and kind of bravery that it tells us a lot, and we're grateful for it. Sandra Singh Lowe, thank you very much for being with us today. It's been great to have you.
Thank you, Tom. You are the best.
Yeah, right back at you. Sandra Singh Lowe's new book is The Mad Woman in the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.